Accession number 13361 to K Lodge Reel 2.
Mr. K Lodge, Reel 2. You mentioned that the toilet facilities at Brandsmith were quite good, Mr. Lodge. Were these kept clean in the way that your barracks were kept clean?
Yes, they were kept very clean. Yeah.
You're coming into a situation which, whilst you were looking forward to it, would be new to you. You were living very close proximity to people from all over the place. Did you find you could take to this easily? Did you have any problems with this?
I never had any problems taking to the army, you know, but I know a lot of people had. With me being a cadet, you know, when I went to the army, I knew all the drills, and you know, so that helped me quite a bit, so being a cadet. And I've grown quite well. Of course, I was only at Brandsmith. I used to come home nearly every other weekend. You see, and I wasn't too bad.
Did you find any difficulty with the lack of privacy? In your home, you could lead a pretty reasonably private life. There, you were like a goldfish. You were on view, as it were, to someone or everyone all the time.
Well, you never had any privacy in the army, but you just accepted that it was there, you see. And if something's there, you just accept it. And most of the lads didn't think anything about it.
You mentioned the comedian that there is in every hut. Were there chaps in your hut, in your squad or platoon, who showed a great dislike of the army and didn't fall in easily with the routine?
There's always one or two that doesn't like the discipline in the army. He doesn't like, maybe he doesn't like the sergeant or the sergeant major. Maybe he doesn't like cleaning his equipment, and you get the choppers always in bother, you know, always late, or they don't get back from leave on time, right? Some of them couldn't care less, but that was only a few of them. Most of the lads are pretty good.
Was there any initiation ceremony amongst you, some of these rather horrendous stories of being initiated into a group of people?
No, there was never anything like that. At least I didn't come across it.
Any bullying take place? Some of, you know, of the quieter or weaker members of the unit that were picked upon by others?
Not really. Sometimes you see a lot of horseplay with the bigger lads, a bit rougher than some of the other lads, perhaps a bit finer. You got that horseplay, but there was never anything really nasty. You get a one or two fights, in the barrack room, it was never anything nasty, really.
Army language is a bit strong. Was that relatively new to you, or were you used to it?
I was more or less used to it. So, you know, you're having your working with them. You always get the harsh language in the army, even coming from the sergeants and the sergeant majors. And so he was.
You said that after you'd finished your cleaning and shaving and making up beds, etc., you were then marched, paraded down to the breakfast Paul.
Yes.
How was breakfast organised for you, in the sense of, did you have to queue up for your meal in line, or what was the system?
Right, at Bradsworth, you queued up in the mess hall. And it was pretty good, because you had plates. And all you did was just form a line, pick up your plate, and you went along, and you had the ATS personnel serving out the grub. And then you just went to your table, and then when you were finished, you carried your plate back, put on the table. You didn't have to watch them, and the way you go. But there was sometimes, there was very often a mishap with these plates, because they put them on a table and used to get very high. Till it got that high, now and again, the whole lot used to go. It was a tremendous crash. And the person that was the one that put his plate on last, he was the one that got out of there quick.
Were they metal or?
No, proper.
China.
Proper plates, yes.
Mm-hmm. So you must have gone through some plates.
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah.
And was the cooking done by these ATS people?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Did the relationship between yourselves and these ladies, how did that go? Because obviously they were the only, probably just about the only women on the camp.
Yeah, there was relationships with the lads in the camp, but there was also outlying villages, you know, at Pagebank, Willington.
What did you get for breakfast?
Breakfast was usually porridge, sausage, bacon, I can't remember what we used to go with the sausage and bacon, bread, you know, tea.
Sufficient?
Yes.
After breakfast, and presumably your march back to your billet, your hut, what was the usual or routine kind of thing that would happen after that?
After breakfast, well, that depended on what was on the agenda for the day. You had to maybe change into denims if you're going on to the assault course, or if you're going up to the gym with PT, you would put your PT gear on and your greatcoat over the top, because it was in the winter time then, and then they would trot you up to the gym, or you would have maybe went on to the branch within a 30-yard range, and or you would go on weapons train or a lecture in the hut. Oh, various things. These Apka lessons. Have you heard of Apka lessons? You used to stand for something, you know, like sort of, what would that be? Sort of about different things in life. Not actually about the army, anything in general, educational.
Were the tests to pass to qualify for at an educational level?
The what? In the army?
In the army itself.
No.
Like
no.
A continuation of schooling, you might say.
No, there's nothing like that.
The lectures, you say, in that sense, were life in itself. Did you have lectures on the regiment's history to build up this tradition?
Yes. When you first went into the regiment, you were given a book. I've still got my book. It's a short history of the regiment, and then we had a talk on it. But that just happened once, Lee, at the beginning.
After you'd done your morning stint, did you get a break during the morning before lunchtime?
Yes, nappy break, usually about 10 o'clock.
And that was at the nappy.
Yes.
Yeah. Were you able to take advantage of that? What kind of things were you able to buy, purchase?
In the Nuffy, well, tea, cakes, rock buns. That was just on a 10 o'clock break. On a night time, it was different. You could get your supper there, which consisted mostly of shepherd's pie or cottage pie or something. And beer, of course. You could get beer or orange or whatever you wanted.
How long was the break?
About, well, I can't remember exactly. Maybe 10 minutes or a quarter of an hour.
And after the break, you continue with your program up to lunchtime?
Yes, it continued again. Then up to lunchtime.
What kind of food were you getting for lunch?
Well, that consisted of meat, veg, and a sweet after that. Like. That was pretty good as well.
In the afternoon, what was the usual kind of routine that you would be facing in an afternoon?
On an afternoon, where it was very often Wetmore's train or a route march. No, I used to like a route march. It got you out of camp the way along the road.
How long might you march?
5 mile.
And what were you carrying?
Buried. Any small pack. You know what I mean by a small pack? Just a small pack of belt.
And had you anything in your small pack?
Yeah, your mess tins. I carried my water bottle and a spare pair of socks and hold all, towel. Used to, although you maybe didn't need them, used to make you carry them. That was your trainer.
In a long route march, were there stops? Did you go with stages of this total distance?
Oh, you had the rest period. Yeah.
How often did they occur in a long march?
On a long march? Well, it was pretty regular. Pretty regular.
Did you do any marches longer than 5 miles?
Oh, yes, sir.
We have followed, obviously, over long distances. Presumably some men fell out of.
There was some men fell out. There was people had trouble with their feet. Blisters.
Were you followed? Were they followed by some truck which picked up the stragglers, you might say?
No.
Or they had to find their own way back?
They had to keep up. Even though they had to limp. But they had to keep up. Later on, you put on a charge. If you dropped out, you were malingering. But whilst you were doing your training, they weren't too bad. It was more or less sorting you out as well, you see.
Were your feet inspected after these marches? Was it part of the duty or responsibility of an officer or an NCO to inspect feet?
If you had a complaint, you had your, you would have a look at your feet. Also, while you were marching in, you had a rest period, and you would take your boots off and have a look at the blisters. There'd be one or two medical men there, and they would look at them for you. But I never had any trouble with my feet, like, but a lot of people had. I've seen blood coming out of the boots, blisters, like heel skin.
When you were doing your drills, from the very beginning, were you marching at light infantry pace, or did you gradually move up to that speed?
When, with the Durhams, it was straight away.
So your very first drill on a drill match?
My very first drill was with when you first went into the army at Bradford. You did 6 weeks primary training at the slow pace. and that was the General Service Corps. Maybe I didn't mention that before. But he had to go through the 6 weeks period, you see. And then you went in the DLA. If they thought you were good enough. And other people went into different units. But as soon as you went into the DLA, then you quicker pace started straight away.
So of those that joined with you on that day or that period of time, after 6 weeks, then a choice would be made.
Yeah.
And you could finish up in wherever, or other regiments or corps or whatever.
Well, you didn't make the choice yourself. The army made the choice for you. But if they're sorted, you know, if they thought, well, you couldn't march, you went into the other corps and that type of thing. And if you thought, well, you were just a man for the infantry, you went in the infantry. There was also a branch of the Duke of Wellington's. Was also there as well. They were like a shared part of the camp. It was used to be a bit tricky on the square when you had the Duke of Wellington's marching and you had the DLA marching. They're very slow, and the DLA was quick. And somebody shouting orders up there, somebody shouting orders down here. It used to get mixed up at times. And after you did, but another thing, when you did your training with the DLA, you weren't necessarily kept in the DLA. You still got sent to different infantry units. There was a lot of our chaps went into Green Owens. And other infantry regiments. I think they were going up alphabetical order. And I think they just stopped just before they got to me. So I went to being a Green Owen. Yeah.
So we mentioned route marches, and you did PE every day. Was that a compulsory activity for every day?
Oh, yes.
PT, as it was called then.
Maybe it's not every day, but maybe it's every other day. Depend on what the program they had for you.
And was that done in a proper building?
Oh, in a big guy, in a big gym,
What kind of
a very big gym.
PT drills were you being taught or were you doing?
The arms drill and the vaulting horse type of thing, and I kind of medicine balls, ropes. And things I got.
Did you do cross country runs?
Oh yes, I was in the cross country team. I was a good cross country runner.
Was that done in sand shoes or boots?
Sand shoes. PT in sand shoes. I also did I also boxed for the army. I had boxing competitions in Bransmith. And I used to box for them as well.
What other sports were you doing in this 6 weeks period, that this general service period?
Just in the 6 weeks period. We weren't actually doing any sports.
So sport, there wasn't time for it, in effect, presumably.
It was just primary training.
So we've mentioned drills and route marches. Did your primary training take in using your weapons and getting used to your weapon?
Oh, yes, I.
What were the drills that you were taught in this very initial period with your rifle?
Well, what you were taught was how to take a correct aim, how to fire it, how to look after it. That was just more or less the basics, you see. Zero, and you had to go up and zero your rifle in.
How was that done?
That was done by the armourer. To zero a rifle, you had to do it yourself. There was nobody to do it for you. But the armourer was there to alter the foresight. You took about, I'm not sure now, but it was three shots or five with the correct aim. And if you take five shots with the correct aim, you should have five shots approximately through the same hole. And if your rifle is not true, you'll have five shots to the left or to the right or whatever, then the armourer will adjust your foresight for you till you get it right.
How does he do that? Does he knock it over?
He's got proper tools. He gives it a little tap and it just screws it back in again. Try that.
Looking after your rifle and keeping it clean, what were the methods used?
Any time after you fired it, you've been on a course, you came back, you went to the cookhouse, you got 8 pints of boiling water, poured it down a barrel, then you've got oily gauze on a pull-through, and you pulled it through, and then you had what I call a piece of 4x2, which is like a piece of flannel, 4x2, and you put that on there and you pull through, and you pull that through, the final stage, slightly oiled, you left it slightly oiled, put that. And then you, where the firing pin was, there's always a bit of graphite there, or wouldn't be graphite, there's always a ring. And used to get a bit of pencil and used to take it off. Used to pencil it off. All that had to be clean. And of course, your rifle had to be kept very clean, spotless. You use a brush or a shaving brush to get into all the nooks and crannies, which was then it was inspected.
And what form did the inspection take? What was rifle inspection?
Well, the rifle inspection, fell in outside, and you did the port arms with the bolt pulled back, and you had to put your thumb in front of the bolt so as when the officer or the sergeant looked down the barrel, he could see your thumbnail, and it used to reflect up the barrel, and he could see if it was clean or not, and if it was dirty, well, you were for it.
There was a punishment for having a dirty rifle.
Oh, yes, yeah. If it was too bad, you'd probably get let off with a warning, you see. And possibly the next time you'd probably appear behind a guard and give you a duty.
What rifle did you have?
I had a Lee Enfield Mark IV.
Did you like it?
I thought it was a good rifle, yes.
Was there anything about it which were difficult to get used to, or you had to be careful about when you were using it?
No.
I'm thinking of recoil or that kind of thing.
No, it was pretty straightforward.
Did you have a bayonet in this first 6 weeks as well?
Yeah, the Lee Enfield Mark IV had the short bayonet, the short one like a spike.
And did they teach you bayonet drill in this 6 weeks?
Yeah, I think they did, yeah. I'm not quite sure on them points, but I think so.
Without being too concerned about whether they did or not, can you describe a bayonet drill? What kind of drill was it?
Yeah, what they had was a bag hanging from a bar, and you had to attack this bag with a bayonet, and what you had to do was the sergeant used to be there and he used to say, go on, get at it, you're going to kill him, you know, scream at him, and you jump straight in. You didn't hesitate, you know, you had to jump straight in, still with the bayonets, and you used to have to shout, was it? In, out, on guard, parry, thrust, and then you went through and there was one on the bottom, and you had to stick the one on the bottom, the same thing, in, out, on guard, and the sergeant was sometimes we used to forget the one on the bottom. The sergeant says, "You're forgetting the one on the bottom. He's going to kill you." And it was quite amusing watching some of the chaps do it, you know.
Did you ever use the bayonet?
I've never actually killed anybody with a bayonet, although I've been very close to it. But I never killed anybody with a bayonet. No.
Did they give you, again, thinking of the 6-week period, did they give you any gas training or gas precautions training?
In the 6 weeks, in the first 6 weeks, I can't really, we had a lot of gas training, but whether it was actually in the first 6 weeks or not, I can't really see it.
Again, forgetting that, can you describe the kind of gas training that you were given?
Yes, it was done in a proper chamber with used tear gas. And there was another gas. I cannot think of its name now. But what you had to do was, you went in and they set this gas away. And you had to walk around. They walked you around. And then you had to take your mask off. Get a whiff of the gas, then put your mask back on again. And the different types of gases they used to use, you see, it was supposed to bring the tears to your eyes.
I was just going to say, what was the effect of that whiff? Can you recall?
Yes, it was pretty strong, yeah. There's some people, it was actually sick inside the masks with it. But that was very rare. And also mustard gas, which was a liquid gas, and you used to splash it on you. And you had the proper equipment to take care of that. They used to spray with mustard gas, and you had these swabs in your swabbed it off. And then you had this ointment, and you applied the ointment. And you got to do that straight away.
So it was pretty severe training.
Oh, yes, it was quite comical as well. Them gas masks was the one where they used to wear on your chest, and you had the mask in the tube leading to the container. What this container? In these tubes, you know, some bright spot would get a hold of the tube. The man next to you, he would get a hold of the tube. Of course, the fella that's in the mask, he started gasping, didn't he? Off comes the mask. Because this is a joke, this is a great laugh, you say. Very funny. That often happened, that. The fear of a trick was to grab the tube so you couldn't breathe. Yeah, then you used to be wondering what was up. And then later on, we got the new, the more modern ones.
How did they differ from the chest ones?
Oh, well, they were like just a small respirator just a
nozzle.
Just with a container on.
A cylinder.
The side, so as you could fire your rifle, so it would be on that side, and you wore that on your belt, on your back, possibly your weapon belt on your back. So if you were lying down, you could get to it easy, pull them out, put them straight on. Oh, the long way better than the old fashioned one.
Did you ever have to use them?
Never used a gas mask in action, never. In fact, people throw them away. They were thrown away. Had there been any gas used by the Germans at the end of the war, they would have wiped the British Army out. There's nobody carrying them. The Germans always carried theirs. always.
Did you, were you introduced to any other weapons in the first 6 weeks?
Well, first 6 weeks, it's a bit hard to think about when you've got the 6 weeks and the daylight battling both together, you know. And possibly would be.
What other weapons did you have experience of?
Small arms, Sten guns, Tommy guns, hand grenades, 36 mils bombs, 69 Bakelite bomb. Well, I said Bakelite, I thought that was made with Bakelite. And a phosphorus bomb.